Hi, and welcome to the Kubernetes podcast from Google. I'm Craig Box.
And I'm Jimmy Moore.
I read an article today. It's not a new article, but it was going around the internet, and it talks about life before smartphones. And that got me thinking, over the last week, we've had what I would call very spotty, patchy weather here. It's a British thing. We have to talk about the weather. But basically, it's rained on and off for maybe 30, 40 minutes at a time. And one of the things that my phone will do is it will tell me through its use of weather radar and hyperlocal weather apps, it'll say, it's about to rain. And pretty accurately, almost down to the nearest minute, it will tell me this, and I'll be able to seek shelter and know when it's going to end. And I don't know how I'd live without that.
Yeah, in San Francisco, we have microclimates. It's literally maybe 10 or 15 degrees difference, depending on the neighborhood that you're in. And frankly, I'd like that to be a little better, or just to know when the fog is going to be gone, because that's actually not something we predict well, but perhaps in the future.
Two questions then. Can you chase the neighborhoods around? Can you say, well, I know where the rain's going to be in this neighborhood, so therefore I've got to zip out to the next one on my Lime scooter or whatever it is?
Oh, yes. You have your Lime scooter, your Lyft scooter, your Uber scooter. You got all the scooters, and you can zip around depending. Unfortunately, the buses aren't fully up to speed again yet, but we got the scooters.
My second question about San Francisco is, how do you feel about the fog having a personality and a name? Does it make you feel better knowing that the fog's name is Carl with a K?
Absolutely. It's harder to hate Carl. You know, he kind of peeks up around the mountain in the middle of town, and you're like, oh, there's Carl. Stick around over there. Sometimes he like listens and stays back. Sometimes he's coming and just taking full over. But, you know, he's beautiful, actually, and so keeps me at a nice 65 degrees Fahrenheit while the rest of the West Coast are at 100-something degrees. So I love Carl for now.
That's 18 degrees for those of us in the old money world.
Or the rest of the world.
Now, you escaped the fog in San Francisco last week and headed off down to LA for a few days.
Yes, big old La La Land. My partner and I went and visited a family, friends of ours, a family of four, mom and dad and two kids, which was new for us. Yeah. But we went to Universal Studios, so I love theme park life.
Given that there's been closures and openings of things over time, what's the current state of theme parks where you are?
Yeah, you know, they actually did a great job. Southern California, now all of California, are back in a mask mandate for indoor locations. So, You know, we did that. Most of the time, most of what we were doing were outside. But, you know, we kept our masks on anyway because it's just as easy. And it was pretty warm, but lots of shade and, you know, great California air. But I think people are, you know, ready to keep their masks on and take care of what we need to do. They're not checking vaccinations in a theme park, but they were definitely encouraging social distancing and masks and lots of opportunities to like eat outside in the shade. So I thought they did a great job, actually.
If the in-person KubeCon does end up going ahead in October, and I will probably bet either side of that, there is a group outing being arranged to go to Disneyland. Can you give people who might be attending a theme park for the first time some Jimmy Moore theme park advice?
Craig, you have just touched on what I should probably have my PhD in. Okay, I lived in Orlando for many years. I worked at both Walt Disney World and Universal. I was a skipper on Jaws, if you know, you know. And I just love the theme park. So I spent a lot of time there, and I definitely have some great tips. So number one is start early. Go when the park opens. Everyone else is disoriented. Get to the good rides, right? Go to the back of the park, hit your Harry Potter, hit your Space Mountain, whatever you're going to do. Also, if the park's set up in a circle, don't go left. That's where everyone goes. Go to the right, right? And you'll be able to hit up quite a few things. Single rider lines are your best friend. You don't need to be with your family for that 3 minutes. Just get on the ride. It cuts the wait down by half, if not more. We literally walked right on the Transformers ride.
But what about those photos that they take and try and sell you at the end?
I mean, you don't really want that anyway. You're going to buy it. It's a waste of money. That's a top tip. Don't spend money on those things. Take a picture of the screen. I'm not representing the Walt Disney Company or Universal with that statement, but I'm just telling you, it's true.
I will admit to having a few pictures of screens in my camera roll.
Absolutely. And you know what? Nobody looks at it again. I love actually taking a video on a roller coaster of me and the people behind me. It's super fun. I will also say, you know, use the shows as an opportunity to sit down and take a break. And when I used to go with my buddy, I would say, if you need sunscreen or you need something, find a mom with a stroller. They have everything in that thing. So those are my tips for good life at the theme park.
I went to Universal Studios a few years back, and I will leave out with my top tip, which is I went on the simulator ride. It was the Simpsons ride. I'm not sure if that's what it still is, but you get in a little vehicle and you're thrown around. It simulates being on a roller coaster. But the strangest thing I found is that you can feel, obviously, the pit of your stomach, the butterflies. If you close your eyes on a simulator ride, it all just goes away. You don't feel anything at all.
It does. You need all the senses engaged to make it actually feel real. Otherwise, you just feel like you're being bumped around. And it, you know, if you're getting a little swirly, like on Harry Potter, that's a pretty intense ride. Highly recommend. But yeah, close your eyes. Things calm down.
If only that were true for the rest of the world. Let's get to the news. Kubernetes 1.22 has been released with over 50 enhancements in areas such as security, API, and Windows support. Listen to today's interview for more details. If, after that, you're inspired to join the Kubernetes 1.23 release team, you can find a link to the sign-up form in the show notes.
The Linkerd service mesh has announced its graduation in the CNCF. The fifth project to join the foundation, Linkerd watched 10 other projects join later and graduate sooner, and then convinced the powers that be to relax the must-have-maintainers from more than one company rule. The project has 7 maintainers, all employed by its creator Buoyant, but was granted a waiver because it could, in theory, one day have more.
In March, we brought you the news of the Sigstore initiative and the Cosine project, and since then we've talked to both Dan Lawrence and Priya Wadwa from the team. Not 6 months later, we can announce that the Cosine container signing tool has hit version 1.0, marking its general availability and readiness for production use. Congratulations to the team, incidentally also 7 maintainers, with contributors from 32 organizations.
If the inevitable rejection of your KubeCon proposal left you in tears, the team from Cloud Native Rejects, with a K, has returned to soothe your pain. The conference, which we spoke about in episode 79, runs again on the 9th and 10th of October, the weekend before KubeCon. It aims to run both in-person in Los Angeles and online. And CFP's close August 13th.
Well worth missing the theme park for. The team behind Calm, with a K, went through Y Combinator and heard during their research that getting a GitOps pipeline set up was too hard. Their answer is Concrete, also with a K, a cloud-hosted continuous delivery system for Kubernetes built on Argo CD. Concrete has a free tier and starts at $30 a month for paid, with the team currently soliciting feedback on their product market fit.
In the YC class before that one, there was a startup called Nestybox, who built an open source container runtime called Sysbox. Sysbox lets you run full systems that you would previously have had to run on VM, but it only worked in Docker. The team have added Kubernetes support, letting you run secure, rootless workloads next to your regular pods. The community edition is free on GitHub, and the enterprise edition starts at $33 a month.
CuriFence, a tool which I have previously described as a web application firewall plugin for Envoy, has added support for Nginx. Thus, I shall now describe it as a web application firewall plugin for Envoy or Nginx. CuriFence is open source with a premium product to launch soon. Might we suggest $30 to $33 per month?
It is the going rate. Congratulations to Replicated, whose CEO Grant Miller joined us in episode 143. They've just announced a $50 million Series C investment led by Owl Rock. They'll be using at least some of that cash on their home office reimbursement program, which covers up to $10,000 per year per employee for their fully remote workforce.
Lots of updates in the Kubernetes-based platform space this week. Deckhouse, a Kubernetes platform from Flunt, is generally available. Deckhouse uses raw cloud infrastructure to build a consistent Kubernetes-based environment upon which they can offer a 3.5 nines SLA. You can get a community, enterprise, or hosted edition. Red Hat has released version 4.8 of OpenShift, offering sandboxed containers, serverless functions, and improvements to the developer console. Raphe Systems added new features to its Kubernetes-managed cloud, including enterprise-wide dashboards, single-click upgrades, and configuration overrides for multi-cluster deployments.
VMware's Tanzu team maintains a suite of templating and application deployment apps called Carvel. The project has added a new feature, KApp Controller, a package manager for Kubernetes. They wanted something that was like RPM, apt, or brew, but seemed to have failed to find Helm in all of their Google searching. It builds on their KApp specification for deploying locally written or provided code to the cluster.
Finally, if you wanted to go one click simpler, Porter, not to be confused with the Microsoft tool of the same name, wants to be your Heroku on top of Kubernetes. The founding team announced a $1.5 million seed round this week to help with that goal. From the same YC class as Nestybox, Porter is a SaaS that runs in your own cloud, where you pay for your own hosting. You can use their open source version or call them for pricing.
And that's the news.
Savitha Raghunathan is a senior platform engineer at MathWorks and the release team lead for the recently released Kubernetes 1.22. Welcome to the show, Savitha.
Hey, Craig. Thanks for having me in the show. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. I've interviewed a lot of people on the show, and you're actually the first person who's bothered asking me.
I'm glad. It's something that I always do. Just want to make sure the other person is good and happy and like...
Well, that's very kind of you. Thank you for kicking off on a wonderful foot there. I want to ask, first of all, you grew up in Chennai, and my association with Chennai is the Super Kings cricket team. Was cricket part of your upbringing?
Yeah, actually a lot. My mom loves watching cricket. And then I have an younger brother, and when we were growing up, we used to play cricket on the terrace. Everyone surrounded me, my best friends, and even now, my partner, he loves watching cricket. So cricket is a part of my life. I have stopped watching it a while ago, but I still enjoy a good game.
It's probably a bit harder in the US. Everything's in a different time zone. And I find, obviously, with my cricket team being on the other side of the world, that it's a lot easier when they're playing near me as opposed to trying to keep up with what they're doing when they're playing at 3 a.m.
That is actually one of the things that made me lose touch with cricket. I'm going to give you a piece of interesting information. I never supported Chennai Super Kings, by the way. I always supported Royal Challengers of Bangalore. I once went to the stadium and it was a match between the Chennai Super Kings and the RCB. I was the only one who was cheering whenever the RCB hit a sixer or when they were scoring, and I got the stares of thousands of glares. Like, people looking at me, I'm like, what are you doing? And my friends are like, you're going to get us killed. Just stop screaming.
Well, first of all, I hear you. As a New Zealander in the UK, there are a lot of international cricket matches I've been to where I am one of the few people dressed in the full beige kit. But I have to ask, why an affiliation with a different team?
I'm not sure. When the IPL came out, and I really liked Virat Kohli, and he was playing for RCB in that time, and I think pretty much that's it.
Well, what I know about the Chennai Super Kings is that their coach is New Zealand's finest batsman and air conditioning salesman, Stephen Fleming.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's a dead ringer for the guy who played the yellow wiggle back in the day.
Oh, interesting. I remember the name, but I cannot put the picture and the name together. I stopped watching cricket once I moved to the States, and then all my focus was on studies and extracurriculars. I have always been an introvert, and the campus, it was a new thing for me. So they had international festivals, and every week they'd have some kind of new thing going on. So I'd go check them out. Still won't participate, but I did go out and check them out. That was a big feat for me around that time, because a lot of people... And still, even now, a lot of people, they kind of scare me. Like, I don't know how to make a conversation with everyone. I'll just go and say, hi, how are you? Okay, I'm good. I'm just going to move on, and I'll just go to the next person. And after 2 hours, I'm out of that place.
Perhaps a pleasant side effect of the last 12 months. A lot fewer gatherings of people.
Could be that, but I'm so excited about KubeCon. But when I think about it, I'm like, oh my God, there's going to be a lot of people. What am I going to do? I'm going to meet all my friends over there. Sometimes I have the social anxiety, like, what's going to happen?
What's going to happen is you're going to ask them how they are at the beginning, and they're immediately going to be set at ease.
I hope so, they do.
Let's talk a little bit then about your transition from India to the US. You did your undergraduate degree in computer science at the SSN College of Engineering. How did you end up at Arizona State?
I always wanted to pursue higher studies when I was in India, and I didn't have the opportunity immediately once I graduated from my school there. I went and I worked for a couple of years, and my aim was always to get out from there and come here, do my graduate studies. Eventually, I want to do a PhD. I have an idea of what I want to do. I always wanted to keep studying. If there is an option that I could just keep studying and not do work or anything of that sort, I just pick that other one. Like, I'll just keep studying. But unfortunately, you need money and other things to live and sustain in this world. So I'm like, okay, I'll take a break from studies and I will work for a while.
The road to success is littered with dreams of PhDs. I have a lot of friends who thought that was the path they were going to take, and they've had a beautiful career and probably aren't going to go back to it. Did you use the MATLAB software at all while you were going through your schooling?
No, unfortunately. So that is a question that everyone asks. I have not used MATLAB. I haven't used it even until now. I don't use it for work. I didn't have any necessity for my school work. It didn't have anything to do with MATLAB. I never analyzed or data processing or anything with MATLAB. So unfortunately, no. Everyone asks me, like, you're working in the MathWorks. Have you used MATLAB? I'm like, no.
Fair enough, nor have I. But it's been around since the late 1970s. So I imagine there are a lot of people who will have come across it at some point. Do you work with a lot of people who have been working on it the whole time?
Kind of. Not all the time, but I get to meet some folks who are working on the product itself. Most of my interactions are with the infrastructure team and platform engineering teams at the MathWorks. One other interesting fact is that when I joined the company, MathWorks has an extensive internal curriculum for training and learning, which I really love. They have intro to MATLAB, and that's in my bucket of things to do. And it was like 5.5 years ago I added it, and I never got to it. I'm like, okay, maybe this year at least I want to get to it and I want to learn something new. My partner, he used MATLAB extensively and he misses it right now at his current employment. And he's like, you have the entire license, you have access to the entire suite and you haven't used it. I'm like, no.
Well, I have bad news for the idea of you doing a PhD. I'm sorry.
Another thing is that none of my family knew about the company, MathWorks and MATLAB. The only person who knew was my younger brother. And he was so proud. He was like, oh my God. When he was 12 years old, he started getting involved with robotics and all the stuff. And that's how we got introduced to MATLAB. And he goes absolute bananas for the swag. So all the t-shirts, all the hoodies, any swag that I get from MathWorks goes to him without saying. Of all the 5-6 years, the things that I've got, there was only one sweatshirt that I kept for myself, and everything else, I've just given it to him. And he cherishes it, and he's the only one in my family who knew about MATLAB and MathWorks. Now everyone knows because I'm working there, and they are like, initially, I don't even know this company name. Is it like Amazon? I'm like, no, it's not definitely like Amazon. It's like, we make software that can send people to the moon, and we also make software that can do amazing robotic surgeries and even make the car drive on its own. So that's something that I take immense pride. I know I don't directly work on the product, but I'm enabling the people who are creating the product. I'm really, really proud about it.
I think Jeff Bezos is working on at least 2 out of 3 of those disciplines that you mentioned before. So so maybe a little bit like Amazon. One thing I've always thought about MATLAB is that because it's called MATLAB, it solves that whole problem of Americans call it math and the rest of the world call it maths. And like, why do the Americans think there's only one math?
Oh, definitely. So I had trouble. So growing up in India, it's always British English. And I had so much trouble when I moved here. So many things changed. One of the things is maths. I'm like, I always got used to writing maths, physics and everything.
Mm-hmm. They don't call it physics in the US, do they?
No, they don't. Luckily, they don't. So that still stays physics. But math, I had trouble. Like math problem, like it's math. Even when you do the full abbreviations like mathematics and you're still calling it math, I'm like,
They can do the computer science abbreviation thing and call it math 7S or whatever the number of letters is.
Just like Kubernetes, K8S.
Yeah. So your path to Kubernetes is through MathWorks. They started out as a company making software which was distributed in a physical sense and boxed copies, if you will. I understand now there is a cloud version. Can I assume that that is where the two worlds intersect?
Kinda. I have interactions with the team that supports MATLAB online on the cloud, but I don't get to work with them on a day-to-day basis. But yeah, kind of they use Docker containers and they are building the platform using Kubernetes. So yeah, a little bit of that.
So what exactly is the platform that you are engineering day-to-day?
Providing Kubernetes as a platform, obviously, that goes without saying, to some of the internal development teams. And in the future, we might expand it to more teams within the company. So that is a focus area right now. So that's what we are doing. In the process, we might even get to work with the people who are deploying MATLAB on the cloud, which is exciting.
Now, your path to contribution to Kubernetes, you've said before, was through fixing a 404 error on the Kubernetes.io website. Do you remember what the page was?
I do. So I was going through something for work and I came across this change log, and Kubernetes is a nice page listed. So once you get the release page, and then there would be a long list of change logs. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I fixed was the person who worked on the feature had changed their GitHub handle, and that wasn't reflected on this page. So that was my first. I got curious and I clicked on the links, and then one of the link was the handle, and then that went to 404, and I was like, yeah, I'll just fix that, you know. Like, they have done all the hard work. They can get the credit that's due, and it was easy. It wasn't overwhelming for me to pick it up as my first issue. Because before that, I lurked around Kubernetes for about 6 to 8 months without doing anything because it was just a lot.
Now, one of the other things that you said, initial contribution, is that you had to learn how to use Git. As a very powerful tool, I find Git is a high barrier to entry for even contributing code to a project. When you want to contribute a blog post or documentation or a fix like you did before, I find that to be almost impossible to think how a new user would come along and do that. What was your process, and do you think that there's anything we can do to make that barrier lower for new contributors?
Of course. So there are more and more tutorials available these days. There is this new contributor workshop. They actually have a Git pull request, how to do a pull request and stuff like that. And a couple of folks from SIG documentation were working on what Git commands that you would need or how to get from writing something small and getting it committed. But more tutorials or more links to intro to Git would definitely help. The thing is also, someone like a documentation writer, they don't actually want to know the entire Git. Honestly, it's an ocean. I don't know how to do it. Most of the time, I still ask for help, even though I work with Git on a day-to-day basis. There are like several articles and a lot of help available already within the community. Maybe we could just add a couple more to the Kubernetes Dev. That is an amazing site for all the new contributors and existing contributors who want to build code, who want to write documentation. We could just add a tutorial there like, hey, don't know Git, you're new to Git, you just need to know these many things.
I find it a shame, to be honest, that people need to use Git for that, like by comparison to Wikipedia, where you can come along and even though it might be written in Markdown or something like that, it seems like the barrier is a lot lower. Similar to you, I always have to look up anything more complicated than the 5 or 6 Git commands that I use on a day-to-day basis. And even to do simple things, I basically just go and follow a recipe, which I find on the internet.
This is how I got introduced to one of the amazing mentors in Kubernetes. Everyone knows him by his name, Dims. This was my second PR to the Kubernetes website, and I made a mistake, and I destroyed the Git history or whatever. I could not push my reviews and comments, like whatever the reviews and comments I got, I addressed them. I couldn't push them back. And my immediate thought was to delete it and recreate it, another pull request. But then I was like, what happens to others who have put already effort into reviewing them? And I asked for help, and Dims was there. I would say just got lucky. He was there, and he was like, okay, let me walk you through. So we did a troubleshooting through Slack messages. So I copy-pasted all the errors. Every single command that he said, I copy-pasted. And then he was like, okay, run this one. Try this one and do this one. And finally, I got it fixed. So you know what I did? I went and I stored the command history somewhere else in my local for the next time when I run into this problem. Luckily, I haven't. But I find the contributors so helpful. Like, they are busy. They have a lot of things to do. But they take moments to stop and help someone who's new. That is also another part. The reasoning why I stay and I want to contribute more, it's mainly the community. It's the Kubernetes community. I know you asked me about Git and I just took the conversation to Kubernetes community. And that's how my brain works.
A lot of people in the community do that and think it's fantastic. Obviously, people like Dims who are just floating around on Slack and seem to have endless time. I don't know how they do it.
I really want to know the secret for the endless time. Only if I have 48 hours in a day, I would sleep for 16 hours and I would use the rest of the time for doing the things that I want.
If I had a chance to sleep up to 48 hours a day, I think it would be a lot more than 16. Now, one of the areas that you've been contributing to Kubernetes is in the release team. In 1.18, you were a shadow for the docs role. You led that role in 1.19, and you were a release lead shadow for versions 1.20 and 1.21 before finally leading this release 1.22, which we'll talk about soon. How did you get involved, and how did you decide which roles to take as you went through that process?
This is the question that I love to talk about. This was fresh when I started learning about Kubernetes and using Kubernetes at work. And I got so much help from the community and I got interested that I want to contribute back. And there was this first KubeCon that I attended in 2018, Seattle. They had this speed mentoring session. Now they call it pod mentoring. So I went to the speed mentoring sessions and then I said, hey, I want to contribute. I don't know where to start. And I got a lot of information on how to get started, where to do. And one of the things were like SIG release and release team. I came back and diligently attended all the SIG release meetings for like 4 to 6 months. Mm-hmm. And in between, I applied to the Kubernetes release team 1.14 and 15. I didn't get through. So I took a little bit of break and I focused doing some documentation work and I applied for 1.18. Since I was already working on some kinds of not like full-fledged documentation, I still don't write. I eventually want to write something really nice and like full-fledged documentation like other awesome folks.
You'll need a lot more than 48 hours in your day to do that.
That's how I applied for the docs role, because I know a little bit about the website. I know mm-hmm. I have done like few pull requests and commits to it. That's how I got started. And I applied for that one role and I got selected for 1.18 team. That's how my journey just took off. And the next release, I was leading the documentation team and everyone knew the pandemic hit. So it was one of the longest releases. I could lean back on the community. I would just wait for the release team meetings. It was my way of coping up with the pandemic. Mm-hmm. It took my mind off. It was actually more than the release team. There were people. They were all people first and we took care of each other. So it felt good. And then I became a release lead shadow for the 1.20 and 21 because I wanted to know more. I wanted to learn more. I wasn't ready. I still don't feel ready, but I have led 1.22. So if I could do it, anyone could do it.
How much of this work is day job?
I've been lucky to be blessed with an awesome team. I do most of my work after work, but there have been times where I have to take the meetings and attend to immediate urgent stuff, like when during the time of exception request and stuff like that. I take a little bit of time from my work. Mm-hmm. So my team has been wonderful. They support me in all possible ways and the management as well. Other than the meetings, I don't do much of the work during the day job. Like it just takes my focus and attention away too much. And I end up having to do a lot of time sitting in front of the computer, which I don't like. Before the pandemic, I had a good work-life balance. And I just go to work at 7:30 and I'd be back by 4 o'clock. I never touched my laptop ever again. And I left all work behind when I came back home. Mm-hmm. So right now I'm still learning how to get through stuff. I try to limit the amount of open source work that I do during the work time. The release lead shadow and the release lead job, they require a lot of time, effort. So on an average, I'd be spending like 2 to 3 hours post work time on the release activities.
Before the pandemic, everyone was worried that if we let people work from home, they wouldn't work enough. And I think the opposite has actually happened, is that now we're worried that if we let people work from home, they will just get on the computer in the morning and you'll have to pry it out of their hands at midnight.
Yeah, I think the productivity has increased by at least a couple folds, I would say, for everyone once they started working from home.
But at the expense of work-life balance, though, because as you say, when you're sitting in the same chair in front of perhaps the same computer doing your MathWorks work and then your open source work, they kind of can blur into one, perhaps.
That is a challenge. I face it every day, but so many others are also facing. I implemented a few little tricks that would help me. Like when I used to come back home from work, the first thing I do is remove my watch. That means that there's an indication that, okay, I'm done. So that's the thing that I still do. Like I just remove my watch and I just keep it wherever my workstation is. And I just close the door so that I never look back. Even going past the room, I don't get the glimpse of my work office. So I start implementing tiny little things like that to avoid the burnout. I think I'm still facing a little bit of burnout. I don't know if I have fully recovered from it. I constantly feel like I need a vacation and I can just take vacation for like a month or two. If it's possible, I will just do it.
I do hope the travel opens up for everyone as an opportunity, because I know that for a lot of people, it's not so much they've been working from home, but they've been living at work. And the idea of taking vacation effectively means, well, I've been stuck in the same place if I've been under a lockdown, and it's hard to justify that. And it'll be good as things improve worldwide for us to be able to start focusing more on our mental health and perhaps getting away from the everything room, as I sometimes call it.
I'm totally looking forward to it. I hope the travel opens up and I could go home. and I could meet my siblings and my aunt and my parents.
Catch a cricket match?
Yeah, probably, yes, if I have company and if there's anything interesting happening around the time. I don't mind going back to the Chepauk Stadium and catching a match or two.
Let's turn now to the recently released Kubernetes 1.22. Congratulations on the launch.
Thank you.
Each launch comes with a theme and a mascot or a logo. What is the theme for this release?
The theme for the release is reaching new peaks.
Mm-hmm.
I am fascinated with a lot of space travel and chasing stars, Milky Way, and what's the best place to do is over the top of a mountain. So that is the release logo, basically. It's a mountain, Mount Rainier. On top of the Mount Rainier, there is a Kubernetes flag, and it's overlooking a Milky Way. And it's also symbolic that with every release that we are achieving something new, bigger and better, and we are making the release awesome. So I just want to incorporate that into the theme as well. Like, we are achieving new things with every release. So that's like the reaching new peaks theme. So that's a little bit background about the logo and the theme.
The last couple of releases have both been incrementally larger as a result, perhaps, of the fact there are now only 3 releases per year rather than 4, and also changes to the process where the work has been driven a lot more by SIGs than by the release team having to go and ask the SIGs what was going on. What can you say about the size and scope of the 1.22 release?
The 1.22 release, this is the largest release till date. We have like 56 enhancements, if I'm not wrong. And we do have a good amount of features that's graduated to stable. And you can now say the Kubernetes is a project has become more mature because you see new features coming in. At the same time, you see the features that were in use getting deprecated. So we have like 3 deprecations in this release. Aside from that fact, we also have a big team that's supporting one of the longest releases. And this is the first official release cycle after the Cadence cap got approved. So officially we are like at 4 months, even though the 1.19 was like 6 months-ish and 1.21 was like 3.5 months, I think. This is the first one after the official cap approval.
What changes did you make to the process knowing that you had that extra month?
One of the things that community had asked for is more time for development. So we tried to incorporate that in the release schedule. We had about 6 weeks between the enhancements freeze and the code freeze timeline. That's one. And it might not be visible to everyone, but one of the things that I want to make sure was that the health of the team, since it was a long, long release, we had time to plan out and not everyone worked during the weekends or during their evenings or time off. So that actually helped them keeping the sanity in and also making good progress and delivering good results at the end of the release. So that's one of the process improvements that I'd call. We got better by making a post, at least during the exception request process timelines, because everyone worked around the world and there were like people from the UK would start a little earlier than the people on the US East Coast. That the West Coast starts like 3 hours later than the East Coast. So we used to make a post every Friday evening telling like, hey, we actually received these many requests and then we have addressed N number of it. We are waiting on a couple or whatever. And then all the release team members are done for the day and we will see you around on Monday. Have a good weekend, something like that. So that we set the expectations from the community as well. Like, we understand things are really important and urgent, but we are done. This gave everyone the time back, you know, like they don't have to worry over the weekend thinking like, hey, what's happening in the release? And they could spend time with their family or they could do whatever they want to do, like go on a hike or just sit and watch TV. There have been weekends that I just did that. I just binge watched series. That's what I did.
Any recommendations?
I'm a big fan of Marvel. So I have watched the new Loki, which I really loved. Also, Loki is one of my favorite characters in Marvel. And I also like the WandaVision, even that was good too.
I've not seen Loki yet, but I've heard it described as the best series of Doctor Who in the last few years.
Really?
There must be an element of time traveling in there, if that's how people are describing it.
You should really go and watch it whenever you have time. It's really amazing. I might go back and watch it again because I might have missed bits and pieces. And that happens always to Marvel movies and the episodes that you need to watch them a couple of times to catch, oh, this is how it's relating. Or this is how it probably related to something else.
Yes, the mark of good media that you want to immediately go back and watch it again once you've seen it. Let's look now at some of the new features in Kubernetes 1.22. A couple of things that have graduated to general availability, server-side apply, external credential providers. A couple of new security features in the replacement for pod security policy has been announced. And seccomp is now available by default. Do you have any favorite features in 1.22 that you'd like to discuss?
I have a lot of them, and all my favorite features are related to security. And one of them is not security, but major theme of my favorite keps are from security. I'll start with the default seccomp. I think it would make the cluster secure by default and me assist in preventing more vulnerabilities, which means less headache for the cluster administrators. This is close to my heart because the base of the platform is provisioning Kubernetes clusters. So knowing that they are secure by default will definitely provide me some good sleep. And also I'm paranoid about security most of the time. And I'm super interested in making everything secure. It might get in the way of making the users of the platform angry because it's not usable in whatsoever way. My next one is the rootless mode containers. Mm-hmm. So that feature is going to enable the cluster admin, the platform developers to deploy Kubernetes components to run the user namespace. And I think that is also a great addition. And like you mentioned, the most awaited drop-in for the PSP deprecation. The PSP replacement is here. It's pod admission control and that lets cluster admins apply the pod security standards. And I think it's just not related to the cluster admins. I might have to go back and check on that. Anyone can probably use it, the developers and the admins like. And it also supports various modes, and which is most welcome, you know, like there are times where you don't want to just cut the users off because they are trying to do something which is not securely correct. You just want to warn them, hey, blah, 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 this is what you're doing. This might just cause a security issue later, so you might want to correct it. But you just don't want to cut them off from using the platform or them trying to attempt and do something, deploy their workload and get their day-to-day job going. Mm-hmm. That is something that I really like, that it also supports a warning mechanism in there. And another one, which is not security, is node swap support. Kubernetes didn't have support for swap before, but it has taken into consideration right now. This is an alpha feature. With this, you can take advantage of the swap, which is provisioned in the Linux VMs and everything. And some of the workloads, when they are deployed, they might need a lot of swaps for the startup. Example, like Node and Java applications, which I just took it out of their cap. User stories. So if anyone's interested, they can go and look in the cap. That's useful. And it also increases the node stability and whatnot. So I think it's going to be beneficial for a lot of folks. And we know how Java and containers work. I think it has gotten better, but like 5 years ago, it was so hard to get a Java application fit in a small container. It always needed a lot of memory swap and everything to start up and run. So I think this will help the users and help the admins and keep the cost low. And it will tie into so many other things as well. So I'm excited about that feature. Another feature that I want to just call out. I don't use Windows that much, but I just want to give a shout out to the folks who are doing amazing job bringing all the Kubernetes features to Windows as well to give a seamless experience. One of the things is that Windows privileged containers, I think it went alpha this release, and that is a wonderful addition if you ask me. Like, you can take advantage of whatever that's happening on the Linux side, and you can also port it over and see like, hey, I can now run Windows containers in a privileged mode. So whatever they are trying to achieve, they can do it. So that's a noteworthy mention that I made. I'm like, okay, I need to give a shout out for the folks who work and make things happen in the Windows ecosystem as well.
One of the things that's great about the release process is the continuity between groups and teams. There's always an emeritus advisor who is the lead from a previous release. And one thing that I always ask when I do these interviews is, what is the advice that you give to the next person? When we talked to Nabarun for the 121 interview, he said that his advice to you would be do, delegate, and defer. Figure out what you can do, figure out what you can ask other people to do, and figure out what doesn't need to be done. Were you able to take that advice on board?
Yeah, you won't believe it. I have it right here, stuck to my monitor.
Next to your Git cheat sheet.
Absolutely. I just have it stuck there. I just take a look at it.
Someone that you will have been able to delegate and defer to is Ray Lahano from Rancher and Souza, who is the release lead to be for 123.
I want to tell Ray that beware of the team's mental health. Schedule is such a way that it avoids burnout. Check in and make sure that everyone is doing good. And if they need some kind of help, create a safe space where they can actually ask for help if they want to step back, if they need someone to cover. So I think that is more important. The releases get successful only based on the thousands and thousands of contributors. But when it comes to release team, you need to have a healthy team where people feel they are in a good place and they just want to make good contributions, which means they want to be heard. So that's one thing that I want to tell Ray. And also, like, collaborate and learn from each other. Like, I constantly learn. I think the team was 39 folks, including me. Every day I learned something or the other. Even starting from how to interact, sometimes I have learned more leadership skills from my release lead shadows. They are awesome and they are mature. I constantly learn from them and I admire them a lot. It also helps to have a good, strong individuals in the team who can step up and help when in need. For example, unfortunately, we lost one of our teammates after the start of the release cycle, and that was tragic. His name was Piyush Gupta. He was an awesome and wonderful human, very warm. I didn't get more chance to interact with him. I had exchanged few Slack messages, but I got his warm personality. So I just want to take a couple seconds to remember him. He was awesome. After we lost him, we had this strong person from the team step up and lead the communications who has never been a part of the release team before at all. He was a shadow for the first time. His name is JC Butler. So he stepped up and he just took away. He ran the comms show for 1.22. So that's what the community is about. You take care of team members and the team will take care of you. So that's one other thing that I want to let Ray now, and maybe whoever. I think it's applicable overall.
And there's a link to a family education fund for Piyush Gupta, which you can find in the show notes. Five releases in a row now you've been a member of the release team. Will you be putting your feet up now for 123?
I am going to take a break for a while, and in the future I want to be contributing, if not the release team, the SIG release and the release management effort. But right now I've been there for like five releases and I feel like, okay, I just need a little bit of fresh air. And also the pandemic and the burnout has caught up, so I'm going to take some break from certain contributions. So you can see me in the future. I will be around. But I might not be actively participating in the release team activities. But I will be around the community and anyone can reach out to me. They all know my Slack, so they can just reach out to me via Slack or Twitter.
Yes, your Twitter handle is CoffeeArtGirl. Does that mean that you'll be spending some time working on your lattes?
I am very bad at making lattes. The coffee art means that I used to make art with coffee. You get the instant coffee powder and then you can just mix with water. You get the colors. Very beautiful brown colors. I used to make art using that. So I just combine both. And I love coffees. So I just combined all the words together. And I had to come up with it in like a span of 1 hour or so, because I was joining this Meet Our Contributors panel and Paris asked me, like, do you have a Twitter handle? I'm like, I was planning to create one, but I didn't have the time. I'm like, well, let me just think what I could just come up with real quick. So I just came up with that. So that's the story behind my Twitter handle. Everyone's interested in it. I'm like, you're not the first person who have asked me or like mentioned about it. So many others have, like, why coffee art?
And you're also interested in art with perhaps other materials?
Yes. My interests keep changing. I used to do pebble art. It's like just collecting pebbles from wherever I go, and I used to paint on them. Mm-hmm. I used to use watercolor, but I want to come back to watercolor sometime. My recent interests are color pencils, which came back when I was very young. I used to do a lot of color pencils, and then I switched to watercolors and oil painting. So I just like going around circles. One of the hobbies that I picked up during pandemic is crochet.
Mm-hmm.
So I made a scarf for Mother's Day. My mom and my dad were here last year. They got stuck because of pandemic and they couldn't go back home. So they stayed with me for 10 months. So that is like the jackpot that I had, that I got to spend so much time with my parents after I moved to the US.
And they got rewarded with a scarf.
Yeah.
One to share between them.
I started making a blanket for my dad and it became so heavy. So I might have to just pick up some lighter yarn. I still don't know the differences between different kind of yarns and how to do stuff, but I'm getting better. I started out because I wanted to make these little toys. They call them amigurumi in crochet world. So I wanted to make them. That's why I started out. I'm trying. I think I made a little cat, which doesn't look like a cat, but it is a cat. I have to tell everyone that it's a cat so that they don't mock me later. But
it's an artistic interpretation of a cat.
It definitely is.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us today, Savitha.
Thanks so much, Craig.
You can find Savitha on Twitter at CoffeeArtGirl, and you can find Kubernetes 122 at kubernetes.io. Thanks for listening. As always, if you've enjoyed the show, please help us spread the word and tell a friend. If you have any feedback for us, you can find us on Twitter at KubernetesPod or reach us by email at kubernetespodcast@google.com.
You can also check out our website at kubernetespodcast.com, where you'll find the transcripts and show notes, as well as links to subscribe. Until next time, take care.
Catch you next week.